is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking. It's Michael K. Show. Michael K. is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
Hey, this is Greg Buttle, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. That's right. It used to be the Buttle Show, but now it's the K. Show.
Thank you, Greg, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. It's January 5th. It's 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg with you. We're all apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that's your responsibility. A very quick splash to the face with cold water about how time flies. Today is my daughter's 8th birthday. She's 8 years old today. And, you know, I don't know if you feel this way, Don. Your kids are obviously younger. But everybody says it goes so slow when you're in the middle of it. But then when you're on the outside of it and you look at a date, you go, wow, that went fast. Yeah. These 8 years went fast.
During the holidays, I reached out to Rick DiPietro. And, of course,
he's
just
trying to steal my love, aren't you?
Wow. No.
Exactly what you're doing.
It had been a while since we had spoken, and I wanted to reach out and congratulate him on the new time slot and wish him a Merry Christmas and all that. And he said that somebody told him before he had kids, and it's so true, about how time flies overall, but in the moment, like the days are long.
Oh, are they long?
But the years go by fast.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it's hard to explain, Peter, but yeah. When it's happening to you, you really do feel it that way. It's weird.
Well, but it makes sense. I totally get why, because it happens even as you get older with friends' kids. You're like, wait a second. The numbers just, it flies by in a different way than when it's just you you're counting for.
Well, happy birthday to Callie. Yeah. She's 8 years old today.
8 years old.
Because what's the difference between 34 and 42? Who cares?
None.
But 0 to 8 is everything.
Yeah.
Well, and the months, too. Like, they turned 37 months today because they were born December 5th, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you could say the twins are 3. But there's a big difference between being 3 years and a month and 3 years and 10 months. Like, you're still 3, but those 9 months
Great
at
point.
That age are
Great
gargantuan.
Point.
And also, you know, we were telling Callie this, and, you know, I always have trouble with it. I think Peter makes fun of me about it. This is really her 9th year. You know, from birth to one, I mean, when you're 1 year old, you're really 2. You're going into your 2nd year.
Right.
And she's going into her 9th year on Earth.
And your process of from the time of conception, the 9 months in preparation, so tack on another year to that. And I felt, and somebody mentioned this on Twitter, her little rap on Twitter last night.
Yeah.
Could have been country. And I never thought about how there's like a closeness there between, I guess, the cadence of a country song and a rap song.
Wow, deep.
This is deep. Callie's
listen to it, Peter, and you tell me, is it country or is it hip-hop?
Maybe we'll get Anthony to it's a very short song that she composed. She dropped some rhymes, and, you know, she likes it. Now, we're going to talk football, but I'd be remiss. And by the way, if you're turning to Yes right now and you've run to the radio, you're seeing a best of center stage. And as Don always said, that's not a good sign.
No, it's not a good sign. And one of Peter's favorite people, Coach K, is being interviewed by a completely different human
Mike
being.
Mike K interviewing Mike K.
And you're just a different, you're a completely different human being. I don't know what year.
I was better looking and younger then.
No, I'm not saying you were better looking. I'm not
going to look.
Wait, just a different person. And take a look at it, Peter. And
because the real question for me is, not unlike Don, Michael, in past years, he can either look younger and great or like a lost repug soul. So let's
Where
see.
Where am I now?
Right now, you look great. Best
really?
You've ever looked.
You know what's amazing, too, Don, as you watch this? Krzyzewski hasn't aged a day.
No, not a day.
Hasn't, and to this day, doesn't have a gray hair in his head, which is amazing. He's like 74 years old.
Wait, he's dying his hair.
I think he's legitimately dark hair. Beautiful. All right, so I'd be remiss if I did not celebrate what the Knicks did last night. The Hawks are a team that just beat the Nets. The Nets are clearly a better team than the Knicks, talent-wise. And they will have a better record at the end of the year.
And they clearly have the best player on the floor last night, the Hawks.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I was going back and forth. And at one point in the second quarter, the Hawks had a significant lead. I said, well, that's not going to work out. Now, I always DVR the games.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't lock in all the time. And if I go up and I, you know, put the kids to sleep, I looked at my phone. I saw the Knicks won. That's an impressive win. The Hawks are not a bad team. And the Knicks now have won 3 out of 4 on this long road trip. And when you looked at their schedule, you said, wow, what a terrible way to start the season. So many road games. I think 12 of their first 19 games are on the road. Well, they're now 3-1 on a 4-game road trip. That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And Austin Rivers played very, very well, very clutch. Emmanuel Quickley played very well. They already have a nickname for them, Peter.
I heard.
Well, they call the two of them Quivers. Quickley and Rivers, Quivers.
Mm. I don't like it. It's a nickname. Wow. It's a name. You're right.
I like it.
It's awful.
No, it's not. It works.
Yeah, but when being a big Stern fan, I think of Robin Quivers, and as much as I love Robin, I don't think about dynamic basketball when I think of Robin Quivers.
Robin doesn't make you think of dynamic basketball?
She was a very good basketball player in her youth.
That's what I don't know her for that, though.
But I think, they've got young players. And by the way, I'm all over the place because I feel lousy today, but...
Oh, come on.
I do. I really do. I'm lifting. I couldn't sleep last night. I'm lifting the ban on Spike. I felt very guilty doing it, and I kind of did it for a gag. I think he took it seriously because he gave me the wrong owner of Q-tip. So, Spike, if you feel the need to call in, please call in. All right. So the ban is lifted.
Okay.
But I think it comes down to this: they have a coach. Do you know that this is their best record after 7 games? You ready for this, Peter?
Go ahead.
2012-2013, they ended up winning 54 games that year. That was the one bright light in the last 20 years. That was not a bad team.
No.
The last time they were well coached, to be honest with you. It was with Woodson.
Woodson. Yeah. And I kept thinking they've made these mistakes with their coaches. You know, Hornacek wasn't a great coach. Obviously, Fizdale was a terrible coach. But I don't understand why they didn't do well with Larry Brown. It seemed like, Larry Brown's a legend. He should have done better, but I think he got distracted with all the craziness. But this guy's a real good coach. Now, if you want to look at the negative side of your Knick fan, they could have hired him 4 times previously, right. Passed him over. Well, they finally hire him. The players go in. They say each game they feel like they have a great game plan, and they have a really good chance to win. That's a good feeling for a player, a really good feeling. So they beat the Hawks. They're 4-3 over 7 games. The Nets, who will play tonight against Utah, they're under 500, and they're probably going to lose Kevin Durant for the next 4 games because of contact tracing. He does not have COVID-19, but somebody that was close to him does, and that's the rule that the NBA has. I think the Nets are going to work things out. They've got a new coaching staff, essentially a new rotation they're trying to put together. They're going to be a great team. Not even good. They're going to be better than good. The Knicks, boy, in a 72-game season, if the Knicks win 30 games, I think it would be a Herculean task. I give Thibodeau and his staff so much credit. That's what a great coach does.
And that's the most important thing in sports, right? And we could talk about different positions that are important, like quarterback in football and goaltending in hockey or a great point guard in basketball, all that. But, Michael, you see what a difference a great coach can make. Because that's what it's all about. That's why the Jets got to get right with the coach even more so than who their next quarterback is going to be. Because if it doesn't work with the coach, how is it supposed to work? And I saw it with Rutgers this year where Shiano, they finished under 500, but you could see they were in most of the games and they just look like a different team because he's a really good coach. And you see it throughout football. Look what's happened with Cleveland. They finally got it right with the coach and now they're a playoff team with essentially the same players that were lousy last year. Because now you got a coach. That's a big deal.
Now, just Goose on Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I remember when Michael Kay said the Knicks needed to trade for Westbrook, that they were so bad and the youth talent was bad. Shake my head. Hey, just Goose. 4-3. Maybe they're 5-2. Maybe they're a playoff team with Westbrook. Stop yourself. If you have a great coach like they have and you actually get him a great player, that will expedite what they're doing. Don't people understand that? Knicks fans are so rude sometimes, Don. You and I have lived it. I mean, they're hanging on the rim now at 4-3, and they should feel really good because it's a fun team to watch, and the young players are playing well. And as I said yesterday, they have concepts, and they know what they're doing defensively, and they run good sets offensively. But let's not hang on the rim. I'm just saying that you should feel good about what's happening. But this guy actually thinks that getting Westbrook would have been a mistake. No, it wouldn't have been a mistake. It would have made them even better.
Again, I don't want to judge the entire fan base on one rogue tweet, but this is where you get yourself in trouble as a fan, right? Because all through the entire offseason, it was, I just want to have fun watching my team. I have no expectations. I just want to have fun watching the team and watching them grow. And then all of a sudden, they're 4-3, and now the expectations go through the roof, and now they're going to be a playoff team, and they didn't need Westbrook. And then what happens is when things start to level off, 10, 20, 30 games from now, and they dip under 500, then it's going to be bash city because now they're not living up to the changed expectations. Let it be, man. You think the Nets are going to be under 500 all year long? You think the Bucks in 3-4 months are going to lose to the Knicks? Right now, we're going through a very strange time, and good on the Knicks, and they're doing a lot of great things, and they're well coached. But don't change your expectations. Have fun with this, but don't be shocked if 30 games from now, they're 10 games under 500. Because that's what's going to happen when you have a young team. But right now, enjoy it. But don't all of a sudden, through 7 games, completely change the narrative.
I hope that I was terribly wrong and that the young players do step up. Well, R.J. Barrett has games where he's like, one for 15 from three-point land? That's what young players do. If you had Westbrook here and you combined him with some of these young players, the ones that you didn't trade, you know what? You'd be exponentially better. Now, we played, actually Peter did, on ENN yesterday, a cut from Joe Judge. And so ENN, as you know, is from 6 to usually 6:40. It's a two-parter.
It was special.
Let's face it, most of the time it's going to be.
Right, because he can't stop talking. Anyway,
Say he's got a lot of good stuff, but all right.
Thank you.
Right. Well, he's been with you too long. Anyway, the bottom line is this. We played a cut, or Peter played a cut from Joe Judge. The first cut he played, I will paraphrase, where he said, "No, I can't worry about what Philadelphia did. We left games out there. We had 16 games to win enough games that this wouldn't have mattered. You've got to ask Philadelphia why they did what they did." But the second cut, we like to call it in the business the money cut.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Really got our attention. And we thought, let's re-examine it at the beginning of the show because it's that special and that vitriolic. And you know how I love vitriol. I have for years.
Big fan.
Let's listen to Joe Judge talking about playing a game halfway, which is essentially what the Eagles did.
Obviously, players have asked me throughout the day, and I just can't express that. The one thing to keep in mind with this season is we had a lot of people opt in to this season. All right, coaches, players. That includes family members as well. To look at a group of grown men who I asked to give me effort on a day-in, day-out basis and empty the tank, and then I can look them in the eye and assure them that I'm always going to do everything I can to put them at a competitive advantage and play them in a position of strength. To me, you don't ever want to disrespect those players and their effort and disrespect the game. The sacrifices that they made to come into work every day and test before coming in, to sit in meetings spaced out, to wear masks, to have shields over those masks, to go through extensive protocols, to travel in unconventional ways, to get text messages at 6:30 in the morning telling practice is going to be canceled, we have to do a virtual day, okay, to tell them, please don't have your family over for Thanksgiving, please avoid Christmas gatherings, we know it's your wife's birthday, let's make sure we put that one off to the off season. There's a number of sacrifices been made by all the players and coaches in this league. There's a number of sacrifices that come along as well with the family members of the people connected to them. To disrespect the effort that everyone put forward to make this season a success for the National Football League, to disrespect the game by going out there and not competing for 60 minutes and doing everything you can to help those players win, we will never do that as long as I'm the head coach of the New York Giants.
Now, it's a brilliant cut because he never, ever says anything about the Eagles, but we know that's exactly what he's talking about. And I love that he said it. I love the passion. I love the way he said it without even fumbling or fumpering once. So this was something that he played over in his mind, and he obviously felt strongly about it. But I was thinking about this after the show yesterday. I would, if I were Joe Judge, who is going to Canton, by the way, I hit the pause button just for a moment. If the Giants are in first place in the NFC East, and they have nothing to play for in that final game of the season, so next year it'll be the 17th game of the season, and they don't have the first round bye, I don't know if you're going to play your starting quarterback. Now, Tom Coughlin did, under the same circumstances, but to say you that would never happen with the New York Giants, I think that every single circumstance dictates different things. So for him to say we would never do that, if it helps your team win a championship where your guys need rest, I think you're going to rest guys.
Yeah, but I think there's two different things at play here. All right, and we talked about it yesterday. If Sudfeld started the game, I don't know if there's that big of an issue, right?
Right, right.
And Pittsburgh and Kansas City, they did things that were similar, but they started, they benched their starters. They're also playing a game next week, all right, or the week after. They've got playoff games to worry about, and that's not unheard of. I think what Joe Judge is talking about is specifically the way it was handled, a three-point game entering the fourth quarter, and you call off the dogs and you don't try to win the game. That's why there's reports that three players went after Peterson after the game. That's why Miles Sanders is talking about that no one in that room agreed with the decision. All right? If during the week he talked to his team, hey, guys, great job this year, didn't work out for us, we're going to start some backups, there'd be probably players that wouldn't get it, but at least in preparation for the game, they'd realize what was at stake. But to play three quarters, play your tail off, be within 3 points of winning a game, and then have the plug pulled, that's why these players are upset. That's why it's different than every other scenario. And I think that's what Joe Judge is talking about. You saw the looks on the faces of not just Hurts, but the offensive line. Those guys worked their tail off all week thinking they had a chance to win a game, and then it gets taken away from them. That's not fair.
Yeah, I think that the Eagle players, though, I think Peter would agree with me. They played hard. They wanted to win. The objection you have is with the way the coach handled things, but not the players. I think the players played hard to win the game. None of the players packed it in. Doug Peterson, I think, embarrassed himself and ruined his brand.
Because there
were better ways to do this. As Don said, you could have started Sudfeld.
And I just think then the players understand, you know, the rules of engagement going in. You know, I'm getting attacked on Twitter today about, well, what would be the difference if they just started Sudfeld? Well, then those players would have known, all right, here's what's going on.
Take the L!
And then he did hint during the course of the week that he might play Sudfeld. But I would think that people, all right, if you're down 40-0 going into the fourth quarter, yeah, you're probably going to play him. You heard Collinsworth and Al Michaels say it, that when they asked him about the possibility of playing Sudfeld, he didn't rule it out. But I think every player is probably thinking, not at 17-14
right,
entering the fourth quarter.
Because the NBC people asked him, what about in a close game? And he didn't answer. Because that was his worst nightmare.
Right.
He wanted to get blown out.
So, but that's what I would love to be able to ask management and everybody above Peterson. Why not just start the game?
Well, and that, by the way, may be where Peterson is to blame. Because he may have made that specific call. Like, they could have said, here's the deal. We don't want to win this game. We're not trying to win this game. And he says, all right, don't worry. We're going to place. I have a plan in place. And it was up to him to decide how to do it. And he made the mistake of not starting Sudfeld. That could have been in his power. And he thought, it's cool. We'll start Hurts. And I agree. That's completely what made this debacle. It was the aesthetic of playing in a 17-14 competitive divisional game on national television and making the call when it's 17-14.
You could have started Hurts had Sudfeld played the second quarter. I mean,
right.
You wanted to get him some snaps, but to bring him in the fourth quarter or the end of the third quarter of a game that you're losing by 3 points that had impact on the New York Giants and the way the shield of the NFL is looked at, I mean, it's just a bad look all around. And then, as Don said, the words that the Eagle players were confronting him, that's pretty bad. And, you know, Don brought this up yesterday. I didn't think that it was going to happen. You lose rooms.
Yeah. I mean,
you lose rooms and you might lose future players.
Because I do think that can have ramifications because they're universally getting panned here for this decision. And it could have been handled better. Now, I don't like the fact of giving up even on Sunday after the Cowboy game. But, you know, that's what you do. And then the line isn't affected. And then you can go about your business. The players understand the rules of engagement. But after knocking heads for three quarters, and maybe that's what it came down to. I was thinking about this, guys, that conspiracy theorist in me. Did Peterson go into the game figuring, this is not going to be an issue. We're not going to win. That's exactly what he thought. We're going to get blown out. It's not going to matter. And then all of a sudden, they get to the third quarter, right? And now it's a three-point game. Is it possible? Could he have went to Hurts and said, listen, we're going for it on fourth and four here. If you want to stay in the game, if you want to win this game, throw a touchdown pass, take the lead, and we won't call off the dogs. And they didn't complete it. And he's like, all right, you had your chance to stay in the game. You threw an incomplete pass. Now I can't take the chance. And I'm going to make the move.
I believe that even if he had thrown the touchdown pass, he still would have gone to Sudfeld. He wanted to lose the game. The drop from 9-6.
And so, but again, if it's all about going from 9-6, and again, I disagree with this. I play to win. Everybody knows my opinion on that. Kill me if you want to. That opinion's already known. Then just call off the dogs. The second you were eliminated when you lost to the Cowboys on Sunday, that game's a 1 o'clock game. Nobody's going to pay attention. Nobody's going to care. Giant fans would be upset. But other than a national story, it wouldn't be. It would be buried among all the other football that's being played. But because they jerked around, they suckered NBC into flexing the game to Sunday night, and they created this whole narrative where they ended up embarrassing themselves. If they wanted to tank the game, they could have done it the easy way. Just make the decision on Sunday or Monday, and then it's nothing. So how did they get to this point other than it doesn't matter? We're going to get flexed to Sunday night. We're going to lose by 40 points. It's not going to matter. And their team played hard. And that's why those players were disgusted, because they played so hard to get within 3 points with a chance to win the game. And then their coach took it away from them. How can people not see that that's wrong?
Now, the elephant in the room before we go to break, and we'll get to your phone calls as well. I mean, Peter, I'm going to put it to you.
Okay.
Because of the way it went down, don't you think that the Washington football team should say the Giants should be the team in? They should renounce this playoff spot, really.
Yeah, I mean, granted, you know, they were winning at the time that he was pulled, but I still think that they should do the right thing and just give the job.
See, that's why you're the best. You're the best.
Thank you.
And I love how I get suckered into this. Well, you're a Giant fan. Of course you have that opinion. Well, I couldn't disclaimer it enough how the Giants have no kick coming. They won six games. So this whole idea, and we're going to hear Michael Irvin and we're going to hear Keyshawn Johnson, that Joe Judge's motivation for that speech was because he got jobbed. But he said earlier on that, hey, I can't control what they do. He talked about how you got to win more than six games. Peppers said, hey, that's our bad. You know, we had winnable games. We didn't win them. We had 16 opportunities to try to win games, and we didn't take advantage in 10 of them. So the Giants, this has nothing to do with the Giants to have this opinion.
All right, we're going to take a brief time out. We'll take some phone calls. We do talk to Joe Douglas, the GM of the Jets, a little bit later on, I believe at 4:45, and we'll ask him all the questions that are on your minds if you're a Jet fan. Keyshawn Johnson does have that take that Don said, so we'll talk to him on his weekly segment where he's not too high about what Joe Judge said, so we'll definitely grill him about that. 1-800-919-3776. Your phone calls are next. Obviously, if you're listening on the radio, you don't care. Maybe you ran to the radio, but they're having technical difficulties at Yes's control room, and that's why the simulcast is not on the air right now. They're working on it feverishly. They're trying to correct it, and at that time, the simulcast will happen. But if you have a friend that you know is a big TMKS fan, I think you should call them and tell them, get to a radio right away. It's imperative. The show is popping.
It's a moral imperative.
I mean, the 2021 version of the show, Peter, just hits different.
You know what? I think you used to say rings different.
Right.
It is correctly hits different. I think you're right.
Yeah. All right, so we'll take a brief time out. It's Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you right here on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
I'd be remiss if I did not celebrate what the Knicks did last night.
Rivers three-pointer. Bang! Austin Rivers from from downtown, and the lead is 4 once again.
That's an impressive win. The Hawks are not a bad team. And the Knicks now have won 3 out of 4 on this long road trip. That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I think it comes down to this. They have a coach.
Every game we come in, we expect to win. Tibbs, every day, he's on us. He's a great leader for us.
Do you know that this is their best record after 7 games? You ready for this? 2012-2013, they ended up winning 54 games that year. This guy's a real good coach. Austin Rivers played very, very well. Emmanuel Quickley played very well. They already have a nickname for them, Peter. Well, they call the two of them Quivers.
The Michael K. Show.
So I'm Robin Quivers, and now I'm Rhode Island.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Well, I'm glad that at the start of the show, I sang the praises of the Knicks. Because what I'm going to say now, I don't want Knick fans to say that I'm coming down on them. Anybody that's not a blind, pie-in-the-sky fan of a team looks at a team rationally and said, this is what this team is going to be. This is what we think it's going to be. And sometimes you're right, and sometimes you're wrong. Now, I'm not including, like, the dyed-in-the-wool Knick fan who Don and I have been dealing with for about 20 years on the air, that no matter how bad they are, they're going to tell you how great they are.
Right.
And if they have a little bit of a run, well, then they're going to win a championship. They're not just on a run. So we've lived it. We know it. And it's just the way it is.
Jeremy Lin was going to the Hall of Fame, Michael. The Hall of Fame. Not the All-Star game. The Hall of Fame.
Wow.
All right. So there's a story I just saw in the Post online. Reggie Bullock is the oldest Knick, I believe. I believe he's 29 years old. They have a very young team. And he tweeted out on Monday night, which was last night after the win, don't believe the hype. We still ain't bleep. And bleep, it starts with an S, ends with a T. Like, so he's taking receipts on people that predicted the Knicks weren't going to be that great. Well, Reggie, my advice to you would be, play more than 7 games.
Yeah.
And how about this? When you guys went to camp, you should have stood up and you should have said, we're going to be really good. We're going to win 45 games and we're going to be in the playoffs. Don't tell me you're taking receipts now when you're 4-3. That's just silliness. And I don't need the younger players on the Knicks, and they're all babies, they're all kids, to learn from a guy who does something. It's amazing to me, after all these years of covering sports, more than half of my life, that players need some artificial thing to motivate them. Like, oh, you guys didn't believe in us. Oh, stop. Who believed in the Knicks to be a good team? You're making it out to be like we're all bad people, that we predicted that the Knicks weren't going to be good. Experts, NBA people, Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, everybody thought the Knicks were going to be terrible.
What was the exact quote again?
He said, and I quote,
please quote,
don't believe the hype. We still ain't bleep.
I meant to be saying poop.
So he's being sarcastic.
Right.
Oh, he's being sarcastic. Because I was, what if he's saying, what if he was, at first I actually took him at face value. Like, he was like.
I did too, but I don't think Michael would miscalculate it to that point.
Well, he said, look, the story says, like, they counted us out in every way. That's part of it. I didn't even read the end of it. We still ain't bleep. Like, they counted us out in every way. Oh, okay, yeah. You know why? Because we're rational. Got a bunch of young players that have not won anything. The guy who's playing the best right now, Julius Randle, has never been on a playoff team in his life. Last year, he did not live up to the contract that he signed. This year, he's been otherworldly. And I did say at the beginning of the year, the Knicks will win more games than people think they're going to win because they have a great coach. But for this guy to, like, hang on the rim after 7 games, come on.
I mean, you got to know better. And listen, I've given up on the whole humble. You know, professional athletes aren't going to be humble, right? They believe in themselves, and they're always going to do this, especially with the outlet of social media. You get caught up. I'm sure he probably got a lot of tweets from people how bad they were going to be and all that. But can you wait more than 7 games? And it's not like you're 7-0. All right, you're 4-3. I mean, so the expectations were that little that you can actually hang on the rim being a game above 500. They could very easily lose the next 5 straight games, and is he going to say anything then? Is he going to tweet anything then? At least if you wait till the end of the season.
At the end of the tweet, keep working and building, guys. #head down.
Now, if at the end of the season, you know, you end up winning 40 games and shocking the world and going to the playoffs, then hang on the rim all you want. But
right, and people would have been wrong. People would have been wrong.
You know, it's not football. It's not 16 games. Even in a shortened schedule, it's still 72 games. Michael, at the end of the day, we might look back and go, oh, God, they were 4-3. I can't believe they only won, you know, 15 games. You know, I don't think that's going to happen because I think their coach is too good. But can you at least finish the season? 7 games all of a sudden makes a year?
Peter, what was it? Was the over-under in Vegas for them like 18 wins, something mm-hmm. like that? Or is that
21?
Am I low?
Was 21 or 18?
Yeah, I think it was in the 20s. But
well,
low,
I mean,
low,
you know what? 21. Over looks like a pretty good bet right now.
Yeah.
Over looks like a pretty decent bet because I think this guy, Tom Thibodeau, is going to squeeze every last ounce out of them because he's that good at game planning and motivating players and putting them in the position to win, and they have not had that of late.
Right. But there's a lot of teams out there that are kind of just, I don't want to say going through the motions, but they're just getting the feeling out process early in the year. Eventually going to hit your stride. And the teams that they're beating now, they may not get a chance to beat later on. Well, let's play it. 7 games. My God. Even in the NFL, that's not even half your schedule.
I've got good news, guys.
No, I got better news.
We're back on yes.
That's right. I'm better than ever.
Is that, yeah, I mean, it's news.
No, that's good news. Don, I didn't ask you this yesterday. I think it deserves questioning. Is that Lee Majors as the
yes.
$6 million man in front of your microphone?
I got to tell you, I'm surprised you didn't notice.
Oh, I noticed yesterday. It was just such a jam-packed show. I didn't have time.
It was. I put it down into a nutshell, all right? This was the greatest Christmas present of my youth. I wanted the $6 million man doll so bad, it was ridiculous. I wanted it so bad that I actually took a G.I. Joe doll and carved the eye out to try to make the eye that it has.
Peter, in a word, that's
troubling.
Right.
Troubling.
And so, I don't know what happened to the original one I got in 1975, but when I went to visit my brother during the holidays, there's a place near him in Lafayette, New Jersey, called Pandora's Box. It has a bunch of old toys, and they had a $6 million man doll, and I just had to get it. I just had to. I was using my
candy. How much did you pay for that?
I don't think it's anybody's business. Get out of my pocket.
I'd like to know how much you paid.
Why?
There's nothing good that can come out of me answering that question.
Because you know Nancy's going to take receipts.
No, I told her. I tell her it's my cameo money. Peter understands what I'm talking about. It's like it's my mad money.
It's that much money?
Oh, well, no, I mean...
Well, also, why did you take it out of the package? Not because they gave me the box.
I got the box, but the box is beat up and opened already.
But
I'm not a moron. You can't
take it out of the box.
But it was already open. The box was just beat.
There with the doll. It's beat up. It's been opened. All right? It was just a package that it came in at that particular time. If this was in mint condition in the box, like my Gretzky dolls, I would have left it in there. But this is not... I don't do this to make money. It's just that the childhood memories... I wanted this so bad, and now I can relive my childhood here. I mean, it's even in working condition here. You turn the head there, and then he lifts the engine, as you can see there. This is like big-time stuff.
You realize this was the toy. 53 years old, right?
I'm 52. I'll be 53 next month.
He'll be 57 on Saturday.
On February 13th is his birthday.
I'm 57. I'll be 53 next Saturday.
Well, so I can't relive my childhood? It was a good childhood. My parents did a good job with me.
Oh, I get it, Don, but I mean, you're playing with a doll on TV.
I'm not playing. Do you see me playing? I just wanted to show you that it works, that he lifts the engine. That was a big deal. You know, I don't live in a world of the 21st century where the technology is what it is. I mean, 1975, this is a big deal, that it could lift the engine.
It's a gorgeous doll, Don.
I'll have all the fun you want, Mister.
I'm not making fun.
You think he's living his childhood with his wrestling T-shirts?
Hold on.
He grew up well. I mean, I got.
I think he was being. Peter, you were not even mocking.
No,
him. I'm mocking.
Wow. Now,
him.
First Andrew, now me. Look at this.
I thought he was mocking, but he's.
I'm mocking you. He's not. I was defending
you. I just don't understand, Michael.
I hate Don.
And I'm not. This is not a reflection on your childhood. But if you embraced your childhood the way Peter and I do. It would be a different world.
But listen, if you are embracing your childhood, then you cannot grow up.
I don't. What's growing up doing for me? I mean, most of the stuff that makes me is being a 12-year-old. Like calling a game and getting excited for a goal, ranting and raving like a lunatic. So what exactly is being a mature adult going to do for me? I act like I'm 12. People pay me to do it.
See, but you're very fortunate, though. You don't have to pay bills. You don't have to go to ATMs. Your wife does all that for you. So you really, it's truly, you have not had to grow up.
But she handles the money, and that's the right thing to do. But I make the money, right? I'm raising the kids. What do you think? I'm not getting, I got blood in the ground, man. I mean, I act like an adult when it's necessary. Believe me, for 4 hours, acting like an adult's not benefiting our ratings. That's nobody wants to hear from a grown, mature 52-year-old. What they want is $6 million man doll, Don.
I know what? Don makes some really salient points.
Really?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, is there anything less interesting in the world than an average adult 52-year-old man?
Right.
But here's the issue.
That was a drop. That wasn't
was not.
Oh, I actually thought it was him. I felt like Sniff'em Dead was coming. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Steve in Ronkonkoma. Steve. What's up, Steve?
Hey, thanks, gentlemen. I'd like to speak on the Knicks, if I may.
Please.
So I'm a diehard New York sports fan. And as a Knicks fan, it's been a rough go of it for some time now. But for the first time in what seems like forever, there appears to be organizational structure, mm-hmm. actually for all of the New York teams that I root for. It started with the Islanders, then the Mets got a billionaire owner. We'll see how that goes. Seems like Christopher Johnson might actually allow Joe Douglas to pick his own head coach. And now it seems like James Dolan seems to have empowered all the right people. And boy, what a difference a competent coaching staff makes. And I know it's early. I'd like to think I keep realistic expectations about my teams as a fan. And I typically don't get carried away with what I see in preseason. In fact, most of the time, I don't even bother watching preseason. But my brother convinced me to watch a preseason Knicks game against the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
And I was convinced after watching that game that the Knicks were going to be an exciting team to watch this season. And talk about a complete 180 on how a fan base should feel about a player. Julius Randle has completely won me over as the leader of this team. And then when you have R.J. Barrett, who in just one offseason seems to have made drastic improvements to his game, then you combine those two with contributions we've seen from Quickley, Rivers, Payton, Mitchell Robinson, Burks, Knox, even Frank had a few nice games. Yep. You can clearly see that these guys are fully bought into what this coaching staff is doing. So I'll keep my realistic expectations, one game at a time mentality. Eventually, they'll need to add some stars. But finally, we can start feeling excited about Knicks basketball again.
I don't think you almost have an apologetic tone to what you said. You should be excited.
Yeah.
You should, Steve. And we thank you for the phone call, because by doing what they're doing now and being competitive and putting up wins that you didn't think you were going to get, that makes this destination more attractive for people that will spring free and become free agents, where they don't look down their nose at the Knicks. And I thought Peter Boddy said it best in a tweet. Our good friend writes for the New York Post. You know what he said, Donna? And you can appreciate this. Thibodeau to the Knicks is exactly what Barry Trotz was to the Islanders. Exactly. A professional, a guy who's done it before. Trotz won a championship. Thibodeau has not. But Thibodeau has won close to 58% of the games that he's coached in. So this guy's not used to losing and turned around things in Minnesota where nobody turns things around. So bottom line is, get excited. Enjoy it. And if you're a Knicks fan now, you could turn to MSG, watch a game, and be entertained. And the bottom line is this. Not only are you entertained because the team is fun to watch, you're listening to literally a Hall of Fame broadcaster, Mike Breen, and one of the great players in the history of your franchise in Walt Frazier. It's a good, fun 2.5 hours that you could spend. I think that's a win-win.
That's all you're asking for. I mean, you get a legitimate coach. It's strange how everything changes. The coach is just so important. Now, we'll see where it takes them, because you said Thibodeau's been to other places, Chicago, Minnesota, has not won a championship, but he certainly got the most out of those teams, and maybe the third time's a charm here. But it's not going to happen overnight, and you still need talent. But you talk about changing a narrative, changing a culture. Maybe what the Knicks are going to do this year is what the Nets did a few years ago when they snuck into the playoffs and kind of changed the perception of the team. If Thibodeau's able to do that, you'll be surprised how now all of a sudden people won't mind coming to play for Jim Dolan. If they got a legitimate coach, legitimate general manager, legitimate president, a team that overachieved, there could be a lot of excitement in the next coming years if this team is able to squeeze more wins out than people think.
Let's go to Jesse in Middletown. Jesse.
Hey, happy New Year, gentlemen.
Same to you.
Quick question for Don. Next season, do you think the Jets will start serving filet, or is it always going to be top liver?
I'm not sure what that means.
Oh, yeah. Are they going to start winning?
well, who's their coach going to be?
2 weeks ago, a gentleman called, an older gentleman, saying, you know, he goes to a Giants game.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Go to a Giants game, they only serve filet, Jets game, top liver.
I'm sorry, I had forgotten about that.
That was an incredible callback.
There was a Jet fan who said that, the Giants are the filet mignon, and the was it like hamburger? The Jets were hamburger.
First of all,
hey, Don. Hey, Peter, Paul Barrow said hello. Thanks, guys.
Later, man.
By the way, I mean, the Giants won six games. They're Salisbury steak.
No, but I think he was talking about the overall like fan bases, and I thought he was being disparaging to Jet fans. Hey, these guys want a chance to win. The Jets have not been run well, but I think their fans are passionate. Their fans care. I'm not judging the fan base based on how the team has performed. But if you want to know where this organization is going, just like the Nick conversation is, who's their next head coach? If they get it right with the head coach, Michael, you will be surprised how Woody and Chris Johnson aren't a problem anymore, right? Was there talk about Woody Johnson when they went to back-to-back championship games when it looked like they, at the time, got it right with Rex Ryan? You know,
by the way, Giants, we can ask Joe Douglas this at 4:45.
Were the Giants filet mignon when Alex Webster was their head coach? Right? So you've got to
Ray Hanley?
Ray Hanley. You've got to get it right. This is a huge decision, even more important than getting the first overall pick and getting Trevor Lawrence, because I believe you can break a quarterback. We had Wisuzin on, Michael, when you were away, who said that he believed that Trevor Lawrence was unbreakable. I don't buy that. I don't buy that there is a quarterback that can't be ruined by bad coaching and a bad organization. You got to bring in the right guy here. I think they got the right general manager. You bring in the right head coach, you will all of a sudden see that the Jets can win. But that's something they haven't done very well in the 50-plus years of the franchise.
I don't know when our company is going to open up our studios where we can go back. I mean, it's working the way it is. But I'm wondering, Peter, since Don now has, toys to play with that he bought at a store, that sells those type of toys, if he would, in fact, be riding into the studio on a bike.
You mean because, he's in full kid mode at this point?
No, like the Steve Carell character in 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Wow. Is that what I am?
That's what I'm feeling.
Am I playing with the doll?
How do I know what you're doing when you're not on the air?
In what world can I go through the Lincoln Tunnel on a bicycle?
Oh, you could do that.
Not riding. I mean, I live, 40-plus miles away. I just can't believe this, Peter, that I actually enjoyed growing up, that I love thinking back to what was a spectacular childhood that makes me the 40-year-old virgin. If you want the resume, Michael, I'll give it to you.
You want the resume, Michael, I'll
lay it out for you.
Steve Carell had a wonderful childhood.
But you're suggesting something else.
No, I'm not. You're taking a complete leap.
But you called me the 40-year-old virgin.
You did.
I mean, there's a reason they put virgin in the title of the film. Okay,
that's the point.
You were suggesting that I am this child.
You're a man child. You would admit that.
I admit it. I embrace it. But that doesn't make me a lesser person than you.
Did I compare him to me, Peter? I have issues.
Well, hold on. But Michael, you're shooting off Scud missiles at Don. Right. And when he says, ow. And when he says, ow, that hurts, you're saying, hey, what are you being such a baby for?
I mean, I'm playing with the doll. I'm going to ride a bicycle to school. I'm going to act like a 12-year-old. I saw the doll. I am within the financial range where it didn't affect me that I wanted to relive my childhood for 5 minutes and put down the money to buy this spectacular item.
Toy.
Hey, listen, I 1975 was wonderful. It's a different world.
How much did you spend for that? I'm really curious. I'll give us a number.
Peter, you throw it out.
All right. Just, Michael, tell me what the doll is. It's the $6 million.
It's a $6 million man wearing, a red suit. And he's carrying an engine, I guess, of some sort.
Oh. It looks like not that much. No, this doesn't look bad. Well, here's one. Yeah, holding the thing. I see one here. The buy it now is $89.
I think that's what he spent.
I see one here for $50.
This.
So I think between $50 and $75.
I'm not going to tell you, but this is what my brother got me for Christmas. This is a Planet of the Apes wave paper basket.
Why?
From the 60s.
Why?
And it's spectacular. Because Planet of the Apes is a big deal in my family.
What did you get him?
We got because he bought a new house. So we got him a sign that says, welcome to our neck of the woods, the LaGreca family.
Wow.
And
he got you a Planet of the Apes garbage can.
Now, listen, 2 years ago, I got him the Planet of the Apes house from the movie that I actually put together. We really know how we hit different in the LaGreca house.
That's not how you use it. But real quick, I just want to say, There's something going on with how coy Don's being about what he paid for the figure.
Yeah, of course there is.
There's a chance that serious coinage, serious guacamole was spent on this caster.
The fact that he would spend
a lot of money, right? Which essentially is taking food out of his children's mouth.
Well, that's a really literal.
No, it's cameo money.
Well, yeah, that's bonus.
So you can't give the cameo money to your kid's college fund?
I've got ESPN and Rangers to do that.
Okay, that's paying off the house.
But why can't Peter, right? Why can't the cameo money be a little like for little, silly little purchases like that? Cameo's been very lucrative, been very good to me.
Really?
Porn?
Is that true?
No,
that was a drop.
Pearson is actually a little too good with the drops because I actually think it's Don talking a lot.
I know, the timing is too perfect. Peter and I live in a different
world. So how much did you make on Cameo since you came on?
I don't think that's anybody's business. Again, the guy that's always stay out of my wallet, Peter, he's asking very specific questions about my finances.
Well, he's
how much
a bad
I'm paying
guy.
For things, how much I'm making on Cameo.
I do well.
I'm just saying.
How am I a bad guy, Peter? I'm curious. I mean, a lot of people are curious. How many Cameo things have you done?
62.
And how much does he charge per one?
Again, that's nobody's business.
That's $25, right?
Well, that's the word.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think he's come along and already passed me on Cameo.
Well, what are you doing, Peter? People like you.
Oh, the question is, what are you doing, Michael? You know how many Yankee fans would love for you to give calls on their birthday? There's just money sitting there waiting to get picked up, and you're just refusing to pick it up because you think you're above things.
No,
I got news for you.
I'll get
you're above
criticized.
Nothing.
I'll
you
get
are
criticized.
I know you. I've gotten to know you over the last 20 years. You are above nothing, and that's a compliment. But you seem to think that you hover over everybody else.
My goodness.
Stop that thought.
Oh, no,
$1,550. So Cameo gets half of it, right, Peter? That's the way it works?
I don't think that's anybody's business here.
So divided by two. So he got himself $700. The $6 million man cost $775.
No, it didn't.
No, that's not true.
That's ridiculous.
He's saying it comes from the pot, though. He's not saying that was all of it.
Interesting.
I'm not a math guy. It was an impulse buy. So what?
Let them live.
People out there buying like $50,000 cars because they're trying to make up for something else in their life that's deficient.
Oh,
that's not
goodness.
Me.
That is quite a leap that you've taken.
Well, you don't think that people like in a midlife crisis? Some people in a midlife crisis buy a Corvette. I buy a $6 million Mandel.
All right, more of more serious nature. Bleacher Report is reporting there have been discussions about possibly postponing the college football title game due to COVID-19 testing and protocol within Ohio State.
I mean, you could do that. What does it matter?
Yeah,
right?
You can do it.
Play it whenever.
Well, it does matter to ESPN. They have it lined up for next Monday.
Yeah, but then when they play the following Monday, the ratings will still be good, right? I mean, I think the last thing you want to do is play this game compromised. If you got to wait a couple of weeks to make sure it's not compromised, isn't it worth it?
I just wonder what's going to go on with basketball, and we see with the NFL playoffs, if they're not going to quarantine these guys. And I mean, the Cleveland Browns are not going to have their head coach. That's a big deal.
I wonder, Michael, because they're so analytically driven, are they like the right team to have this happen? Because they seem to be so structured in that way that handing the clipboard to somebody else He could probably do it from afar because they don't do anything on field in Cleveland, right? It's all analytic.
No. I mean, because it was analytic when they had Freddie Kitchens as their coach and it didn't work. I mean, Stefanski's a brilliant offensive mind.
No, I do, but he could put together a game plan. And that could be executed from afar. I'm not saying it's ideal. I'm just saying that they might be better suited than a coach that goes by feel. Going for it on fourth down, going for 2-point conversions, that's all out of format. Like that they can be calculated before the game. I'm not saying it's ideal, but it's better than I think a lot of other situations.
Second day in a row, Peter. Andrew's screaming. This time it's at me. You have to break. We have Joe Douglas at 4:45. What are you doing? Screaming in my ear.
Well, it makes sense in this case, though.
Yeah. All right, so Joe Douglas is GM of the Jets, but we still have time before that. Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you, welcome to Yes to join the show. It's the K Show on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Don't scream at me on the show.
Don't defend them.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, USA Today has a story that Major League Baseball Central Office has sent out very, very harsh words to all the teams that they must follow protocol. No one can be allowed into spring training sites that are not allowed to be there. So people can't report early. They have to wear masks, the whole deal. And any team that deviates from this is going to be fined an excessive amount of money. So I think that's the only way you get through this. And along those lines, Hank Aaron got vaccinated today in Atlanta. So that's good. Said getting vaccinated makes me feel wonderful. I don't have any qualms about it at all, you know. I feel quite proud of myself for doing something like this. So, good for Hank Aaron. 1-800-919-3776. About 10 minutes from now, we'll talk to Joe Douglas, the Jets GM, who has a big, big job to do in the next couple of weeks, and that's get the Jets a head coach. Let's go to Matt and Summit. Matt?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Happy New Year. Great. Thank you. You guys run an awesome show, so thank you so much. It's really good.
Thank you.
So a couple things with Joe coming on. Obviously, I'm a Jets fan. I want to talk about that. You know, obviously, Jets fans want to hear, and I know it's been touched on a lot, but they want to hear Joe allude to the fact that he has he's making the decision here. So, you know, if you guys, obviously, I'm sure you will, but if you can press him on that a little bit, because that's what Jets fans want to hear. A coaching candidate that, you know, if you get a chance to slip it in, I'm not hearing it, at least in New York media, enough. That I think that he should consider is actually bringing back Brian Schottenheimer. I think he'd be a tremendous head coach. I think the time for him is now. I think he's innovative. He knows this, you know, he had success here in New York. He knows the media. He can navigate that. He's done it before. He has the pedigree. I think he'd be a tremendous candidate that is not being
talked about enough. You must not have been, you know, one of the hundreds of calls that we would get on a weekly basis, Matt. We thank you for the phone call, hating Brian Schottenheimer when he was the offensive coordinator here. And I guess that's the way it is in football. If the team struggles, you hate the coordinators. You know, the Giant coordinators, everybody loves. And by the way, the Giants offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett, is going to interview with the Chargers for that head coaching job. And Patrick Graham is supposedly going to interview with Joe Douglas for the Jets head coaching job. So we'll see, but I never thought of I don't even read Schottenheimer's name on the probables of all the openings. Done.
Well, he is right now the offensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks. So and he's been working consistently since the Jets job, offensive coordinator in St. Louis with the Rams, offensive coordinator in Georgia, quarterbacks coach in Indianapolis, and in no time since his Jet days have I even heard him being considered as a head coach. And certainly the Jets didn't consider him after Rex. So that's fine. I mean, he did a good job here. They went to back-to-back championship games when he was there. as the offensive coordinator. He seemed to make it work with Mark Sanchez, but I'm with you. I have not heard. Why would you hire him over Bieniemy? Why would you hire him over the guy in Buffalo right now? Like, what would it be? What, because he was in New York before? I don't know.
Yahoo Sports reporting, the Jets are interested in Schottenheimer as the next head coach. And that originally appeared on NBC Sports Northwest.
That makes sense, because out of Seattle. And listen, he has done a very good job with Seattle. That's a good offensive team with a brilliant quarterback.
And he's also linked to the job with the Texans. Seahawks have a top 10 scoring offense in each of Schottenheimer's three seasons as OC. But remember, I mean, you do have Russell Wilson as the quarterback.
Yeah, and Metcalf's an outstanding wide receiver. But, you know, listen, it's, you know, Bieniemy's got the best, one of the best quarterbacks in football, too. You know? So all these coordinators are on teams that have great offensive players and a great quarterback. So one of them is going to get the job. But, no, listen, I liked Brian when he was here. I thought he did a good job when he was here. But that's the first time I heard his name mentioned, and now we're finding that it has been mentioned in other places. So good for him. We'll see if he gets considered.
Let's go to our good friend, Tessa, in West Coast.
Tessa!
Hey, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I'm assuming you have an opinion on what happened on Sunday.
Of course, but a New Year's resolution, guys, I'm trying to have is like to not black out as much. So it was so fulfilling yesterday, Don, when you was blacking out like that with Andrew. I'm like, yes, that's what I was waiting for. But I'm trying to behave myself, but it's really hard. I think the thing that bothers me the most is this. It's not like Joe Judge volunteered the information. Of course he was going to get asked that question because he's the coach that it primarily affected. And I love the way he articulated. I love the way he answered everything. What was he supposed to do? He's a blue-collar, tough guy. You know, he backs up his words. That's what he's supposed to do. But I'm so sick of people saying, oh, so the Giants are taking it. Of course we're held accountable. We should have won games we should have won. Evan Engram should have caught that ball week 7. Boom, that would have been it right there. But that's not the point. The point is you don't do stuff like that. That's why you got flexed. That's why we got flexed that Sunday night. And the 49ers and Dallas got that they knew we were entertaining. They knew that was playing for something. They knew that's what the people wanted to see. That's what this comes down to. And like you guys said earlier, if that was the case, he should have announced that. He should have just said, okay, he's going to play the whole second half. You know he did that. When he set the 9 players, I said, oh, they're trying to lose because there's nothing wrong with Fletcher Cox. They're trying to lose. But fine, whatever. But when I see them as competitive, I'm like, yes. Once he did that, that's a cowardly move, that's disrespectful, and you don't do it. A lot of people, the networks probably lost money, they probably were pissed off, and even me as a Giants fan has nothing to do with that. I was actually excited watching that game. I'm like, oh, snap. Of course, worry for Alex Smith, like, if they sack him one more time. But it was an entertaining game besides me being a Giants fan. But when he did it, I was disgusted. I wanted to throw up. I wanted to cut the TV off. It was just disrespectful. So all these people bashing the Giants and us Giants fans, it has nothing to do with that. I love football. I love sports. And to see that, it was embarrassing. It was disrespectful. And I'm like, oh, we about to turn it to the NBA? Like, what is this? It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible.
I will allay your fears on one thing, Tess, and we thank you for the phone call. NBC didn't lose any money. They got a great rating, so they're certainly not an injured party. The injured party is a team that would have the 6th pick and the Giants. Those are the injured parties. And it could be Doug Peterson because his players are red hot.
And the Eagles in general, although they're the ones that made the decision, but I still think that this can have ramifications beyond just the embarrassment. The sense that this is all going to be forgotten about, oh, it's going to be talked about in the draft, right, when they make that 6th pick, how they got that 6th pick, and now that 6th pick will be judged, right, where if it ends up not being great, that'll get thrown back on the decision that they made. It's... There's very few times, Michael, you can really pinpoint tanking in the NFL. As a matter of fact, going into this year, I would have sworn to you it doesn't exist.
It exists.
Right, but in the NBA, there were plenty of times. Hockey, go back to 84, what happened with Mario Lemieux, but in the NFL, not too often.
Let's take a brief time out. We're going to talk to Joe Douglas, the GM of the Jets. A lot of Jet fans have been waiting for this. He'll join us in just a moment. So stick around here on Yes and on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Michael Kay Show.
Jets GM Joe Douglas joins us now.
I'm a believer in Sam Darnold, but he did not have a great year, Joe. Was that because of him, or was that because of the coaching?
I think there was a lot of factors that went into it, honestly. I don't think you can point fingers at just one thing. The encouraging thing for us was that we saw Sam in December play really good football, and we saw Sam play clean football, and we beat two playoff teams.
Do you intend to keep Sam Darnold as your quarterback, or draft a quarterback with the second pick?
A decision of that magnitude, it's not going to be a unilateral decision by me. There's going to be a lot of good conversation, productive conversations, and they're going to be with our new coach. We have a lot of big decisions to make this offseason.
The Michael Kay Show.
It's my cameo money.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so we just heard from Joe Douglas, and Don, you seem like you got a lot out of it. Tell me what you felt that he revealed.
Well, a couple of things, just to dig a little deeper. The fact that he's like, great point, Michael, about the money tells you that that's probably going to be the deciding factor.
Because that, you have to pay Sam $25 million in that last year, and then you have to give him a big contract.
Yeah, so just the fact that he acknowledged that, even in a left-handed sort of way, tells you that that's a major factor in their decision. And for him to say, good point, Michael, that's the factor, is that it's really beyond how we feel about him. Because there's no way you can have a definitive feel, right? I mean, it's not his pick. He didn't have a great year. You could talk all you want about the starters and how he played in December. Overall, it wasn't a great year. And with $25 million, that's and with a second overall pick, that probably gives them a great reason to move on. And so
right. If you get the second overall pick and you choose a quarterback, you got a quarterback on a five-year cheap deal.
And I thought the fact that's great news for Jet fans. He's not going to get in the way of the Matt Rhule situation from last year. Coach wants to come in. He wants his guys. They're doing it. You know, they're not gonna pass on a great guy because Douglas wants this guy to be his offensive coordinator or cash in this favor for this guy. That's great news that the coach gets to pick his own staff. If Douglas is asked, that's a big deal because that's why they lost on to Matt Rhule. They wanted Greg Williams and Rhule wanted to pick his own staff. That's huge. That is gonna really allow them to bring in just about anybody. Because I think that really narrows the search when you start fat-handing who his assistants are going to be. And they know, if they're picking it to Michael, they knew a month ago who they were taking. So don't get caught up in how Fields plays in the championship game or how he played last Saturday. They've been doing the work on the quarterback for a long time here, and I don't think they're going to be swayed necessarily on the performance. What happened, the 6-touchdown performance against Clemson, to me, I don't think changed anybody's mind. They've already made up their mind. I took from the interview.
I would also tell you this. He's a guy who's very secure in his own skin, and he did not shoot down the college coach angle because that's what he knows best. He's a scout at heart. Guys that scout college players deal extensively with college coaches. So that might open up a little bit of a portal of what's coming. Not sure. Assistant coaches are very good as well. But, I mean, I don't think Urban Meyer would be. I mean, supposedly Urban Meyer might be in line for Jacksonville. Not sure. But there's rumors that he would want $12 to $14 million a year.
I mean, I had heard that he's very much into the college coach, which scares me a little bit, Michael, because we haven't seen.
You never know.
You know, the trend. Work with Jimmy Johnson, although that was a very pro style school with Miami, but for the most part, you know, it's always hit or miss. But I like Joe Douglas, honestly. I mean, I think he's as forthright as he can be, and you got to do a little digging. But I don't know if you felt the same way, but that comment about the $25 million is all I needed to know. I think Sam is gone.
Well, let's see what Ira in Staten Island thinks. Ira.
Hey Michael, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Great interview. Great spot. And I think both you and Don both hit on it perfectly. I love Sam, but I think, you know, new coach, Douglas didn't draft him. I think they have a plan. And I think with the coaching search, I totally agree with you. He made his bread, in the college ranks, scouting and surrounding himself, knowing these coaches. And I think if he feels there's somebody competent and that could be the leader of this organization, like a guy like Campbell from Iowa State or Fitzpatrick from Northwestern, I think he's going to lean in that direction. And the best thing is, Don, you hit it. The fact that they are going to let Douglas just leave the head coach alone and they're going to let the new coach hire his own staff is monumental to Jet fans. So I think that was a great interview, all good signs. And listen, just wish everybody the best. And the most important thing is you guys did a lot of entertainment through a really bad time, and just everybody stay healthy.
Ira, you're a great man.
Yes.
I have a question. How old are you, Ira?
66.
I want to give you permission, as the sports world, to let go. I want you to let go.
He doesn't want to let go.
No, I want you to pick a new team next year. I want you to start.
Don't do it, Ira.
Stop. Don't waste your breath. You know who you're talking to.
Ira, please.
I know.
Oh, come on.
Hey, Ira, I forgot to ask you this. How proud were you? I mean, your nephew was the offensive coordinator for that one game for the Lions?
A tremendous opportunity for him. Yeah, and he gave me a call. You know, listen, the results weren't what he was hoping for, but he was happy that he didn't have 12 men on the field. He thought his scheme was good. He was going up against Brady, and he got a lot of compliments. And I think for his future, I think going forward in the coaching, I think he's going to be just fine. I think it
was he a football junkie as a kid? Did you always know that this was in his future?
I used to take him to road games when he was like 13 and 12 and 14 years old. And this is the truth. Sitting in a hotel room before bedtime, he'd be drawing plays on napkins.
Wow. That's
now,
cool.
Now, are you at least are you incredibly invested in his career? So if he were to go on and win a championship somewhere, could that feel close to like a Jets championship for you?
No, I wish him the best, most success. I mean, I wish him all the world when it comes to success with coaching. I'd love to see him hold up a Super Bowl trophy as a coach, but it doesn't sway me one way. Jets are in my blood.
I've got a bigger question.
I love
so
this.
Give the young man's name. I forgot the name, Ira. What's his name?
Evan Rothstein.
Okay, so Evan Rothstein becomes a head coach. And the coach that the Jets hire, he turns it around. And Evan Rothstein's team faces the Jets in the Super Bowl. Who
Great
are you rooting
question.
For?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm rooting for overtime.
He's rooting for the Jets.
It's not ending in a tie. Well, you can't say the Jets are in your blood when Evan has your blood.
That's true.
It's a tough one. You know what? I'm a winner either way. You know, if the Jets get to a Super Bowl and my nephew happens to beat them, I'm ahead of the game.
Good stuff. Thanks for the call.
It's a nice consolation prize if the Jets were to win the game.
Right.
But you got to root for your nephew.
Well,
what if the Saturday before the game.
All right.
Ira's is sitting down with him and his nephew breaks down in tears. I got to win this game. This is my dream come true. I got to win this game. You're not rooting for the Jets. I'm sorry. Can't do it. I was like Ira till you have kids and family. You get old. Come on.
Don.
That's blood, man.
Don.
Pumping through your veins.
Don, Ira had kids a long, long time ago. He's still a psychopath. Nothing's affected him. He's not you. He's traveling to road games, Don. Don, you quit going to home games that you were getting paid for. Okay? You're a different animal. Now, real quick. Don, I bought the shirt that I'm wearing right now. I bought Reese. You were a major part of why I bought it.
What the what is that, Flutie?
Oh yeah.
What I can't even say.
This is a real vintage Flutie Flake shirt, buddy.
Oh.
And I saw it and I went, you know what? I loved Flutie and I feel like Don will get a kick out of an authentic Flutie Flake shirt, and so I bought it.
I love that. And did you buy Flutie Flakes back in the day?
I think I bought him once before. I was just a fan of him being such a short, unlikely quarterback. And then someone just tweeted me. I didn't know this was a thing. Someone tweeted me that this was a shirt you ordered off the back of the box.
Okay.
Which I didn't realize.
No, that's
also,
right.
Very nice guy. I don't know if you've ever gotten a chance to meet him. A very nice guy.
His
success very well.
We had him at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we had him
in
Super Bowl.
Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And I got him to sign the kid's journal. So, yeah, Peter met him.
Yep, we talked about playing basketball in Bethany Beach, Delaware. I remember that.
So this was in Minneapolis that we had him, right? That was when Andrew got me a cupcake for my birthday.
See, that's what you remember.
That is what I remember.
The things that I remember are You know, Peter throwing, what was it, a Snickers? You threw something to Kirk Cousins, didn't you?
Or I think Cousins threw me a Snickers.
Right. Yeah, it was something like which you got the biggest kick out of.
Yeah.
That wilderness man that was like hovering around the set that we thought was going to kill us all.
Yeah, I remember that too.
But you remember.
But I remember something else too.
Hmm.
For some reason, you and I, standing outside the Mall of America, taking a selfie, and when it was about 2 degrees.
Yeah, I think it was.
I still have that picture.
I have the picture.
It was so cold.
It was very,
very cold. It was just wrong.
And don't you remember me taking Andrew to the party at Prince's house and not you?
Yeah, I tried to block that out, but that's something that will stay with me forever. I wanted to go to Paisley Park. You didn't think I would.
Because we were having dinner with Flip. That might be the last time I talked to Flip, by the way.
Wow.
Wow. Because the relationship has completely been severed.
Is that true? Wow.
I don't know. I'm done with him.
He's a big fan of yours.
Well, I haven't heard from him. We haven't spoken since that day.
You can pick
and we
up a
chose
phone.
To stay with him instead. I had no interest in going to the Prince's house. I had no, but Andrew went. It was a good time. That was a nice trip. I'm glad we don't go to the Super Bowl anymore.
But you also missed the Super Bowl.
But I missed the Super Bowl.
Sad.
Or at least the week leading up.
Let's towel off because we have Keyshawn next.
Yeah.
Weekly spot. He's got a lot of stuff to say, so stick around for this. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.